All right, so today we're going way back to 1953. A courtroom battle that, it still matters today, even in like boardrooms and all that. Picture this. A company wants to give some money to Princeton. Seems like a good thing, right? But then some shareholders, they get all upset. They're saying it's actually against the law.
It's pretty wild, right? This case, AP Smith Manufacturing Co. v. Barlow, it's not just some, random legal trivia. It really changed how we see corporate power, like what they're allowed to do.
Social responsibility too, right?
Exactly. And yeah, even ESG, which is everywhere these days.
Okay, so back to the beginning, 1896, AP Smith Manufacturing starts up. They make valves, fire hydrants, that kind of thing.
Practical stuff.
Then in 1951, they decide, hey, let's donate $1,500 to Princeton. Now, that might not seem like a lot to us now,
Right.
but back then, and especially for some of their shareholders, this was a huge deal. Like, they felt betrayed.
Totally. See, their original charter from 1896, it didn't say anything about donations being okay.
Ah, so that's the issue.
Some shareholders saw this as the company, like going rogue, exceeding its purpose. Like, what is a corporation even for? Is it just a money machine for shareholders, or can it do other things, broader things?
Big questions. So this donation, it blows up into this huge legal fight all the way to the New Jersey Supreme Court. What are we really talking about here?
I think this case really forces us to look at how corporate power has changed over time. Those 1896 shareholders, they invested in a totally different world. Back then, the idea that a company might care about something other than pure profit, well, to some folks, that was radical.
Yeah, like the rules of the game had changed without them knowing.
Right.
And the court's decision, it really grapples with that. Justice Jacobs, he wrote the majority opinion, and he lays out this framework that we still use today. It's not just the company wins. He explains why in a way that affects way more than just this one donation.
Oh, absolutely. And he does it so well, tying together three main points. So first, he talks about implied powers. Basically, even if that 1896 charter doesn't literally say donations are allowed, the law, like common law, which builds up over time, it recognizes that companies can do things that aren't directly about profit, but still help the company in the end.
So it's like the world's moved on, business isn't the same, and the law needs to catch up.
Exactly. And the second point Justice Jacobs makes is about the state's power. By 1950, New Jersey already had laws saying corporate donations were fine.
Okay.
So he's pointing to that and saying, look, the whole policy landscape is changing. States are getting more involved in how corporations behave, pushing them to think bigger than just the bottom line.
That's like society saying, hey, corporations, you benefit from a stable society, from educated people, so you have a responsibility to contribute too.
Right. And that leads to his third and maybe most important point. Enlightened self-interest. Now, this idea was kind of revolutionary at the time. Basically, it says doing good things can actually be good for business.
Makes sense.
Like a company that helps its community, invests in education, treats its workers well, that can boost their reputation, attract better employees, and yeah, in the long run, make them more money.
So it's not just about being nice. It's realizing that a company's success depends on all these other things too, like stakeholders, the community, the world.
Absolutely. And back in 1953, that was pretty groundbreaking.
So the court basically said companies have more freedom, but they don't just stop there, right? There's still some rules.
Oh, for sure. They emphasize that even with this wider view, any donation still has to be reasonable and connected to the company's goals. It's not a free-for-all, like, donate to whatever you feel like.
Right, so giving money to Princeton, a big name university, they might produce future engineers for AP Smith, so that makes sense. But imagine if they tried to donate to, I don't know, a ballet company or something.
Yeah, that might raise some eyebrows.
Totally. And the court wanted to be extra sure their decision would hold up. So they said the donation was okay, both under common law and those newer state laws, like double protection, so their reasoning would last.
A very thorough approach.
And it worked. This case gets cited all the time. It's like the foundation for so much of how we think about corporate responsibility today. It's the granddaddy of like benefit corporations, those companies that are specifically set up to do good things and make money. But it goes even further than that, doesn't it? This case, it also connects to ESG, which we hear about everywhere.
Oh, yeah, big time. The term ESG didn't exist back then, but AP Smith v. Barlow, it planted the seeds, it challenged the old, narrow way of thinking about what companies are for, and opened the door for them to consider things like their environmental impact, their social impact, alongside their financial performance.
Okay, so we've gone from fire hydrants to these huge legal ideas, and now we're at the edge of ESG. But before we jump into that alphabet soup, let's make sure everyone's on the same page. What does ESG actually mean in business today? Maybe the next part of our deep dive, we can unpack that a bit.
Definitely. We can break down those three letters, see exactly how it all connects back to A.P. Smith v. Barlow, and explore all the, well, the complexities and controversies of this whole ESG world. It's a fascinating landscape, and it's constantly evolving. Okay, so we've kind of laid the groundwork, right? A.P. Smith v. Barlow, it wasn't just about, like, one donation. It was about pushing the limits of what a corporation could even be. And now here we are, all this time later, and that case, it's still relevant, especially with ESG.
Yeah, that's the thing everyone's talking about. But for those of us who, you know, aren't Wall Street wizards, what is ESG and why should we even care?
Well, ESG, it stands for environmental, social, and governance. And it's a way to look at how a company's doing, but not just like their profits, you know, the money stuff. Mm-hmm. It's about their impact on the environment, how they treat their workers, their communities, even how ethically they run themselves.
So it's not just about making money, it's about purpose too, right? Like, are they doing good in the world? Mm-hmm. But how does that actually work? What's an example of ESG in action?
All right, so let's take the E, the environmental part. That covers stuff like the company's carbon footprint. Are they trying to reduce pollution? How they handle waste? Their impact on natural resources? Like, are they putting money into renewable energy? Are they trying to conserve water? What about risk from climate change? Are they addressing those?
And more than just like slapping a green label on something and calling it a day, it's their whole operation, how they actually do business.
Exactly. Now the S, that's the social side of things. This is about how the company treats people, like their employees, their customers, the whole community where they operate. Things like fair labor practices, diversity and inclusion, you know, are they hiring all kinds of people? Data privacy, that's big these days. Even like where they get their materials from, is that ethical?
So they got to walk the walk, not just talk the talk, right?
Right.
But hold on, isn't all this stuff already covered by laws? Like, why do we need ESG on top of that?
That's a good point. But ESG, it goes beyond just following the rules.
Yeah.
It's about encouraging companies to do the right thing before someone makes them. It's about being proactive, thinking about their impact in a bigger way, addressing things that maybe the law hasn't caught up with yet.
I see. Raising the bar, so to speak.
Right. And then there's G, governance.
Okay. The last piece of the puzzle.
This one is all about how the company is actually run. You know, their leadership structure, their board of directors, how they pay their executives, what rights shareholders have, and how transparent they are with their decision making.
Transparency, that's important.
It is. It's about making sure the leadership is ethical and accountable.
So good governance, it's like the foundation of a house. If the foundation's weak, the whole thing could crumble. But how does all this connect back to that court case, A.P. Smith v. Barlow? Was Justice Jacobs, like, secretly an ESG guru before his time?
Well, he wouldn't have used the term ESG, but his decision definitely laid some groundwork for this whole idea. Remember, he said corporations can do things that aren't just about profit, but still help them in the long run. That's kind of like ESG's core principle.
Yeah, it's like he opened the door for companies to think, hey, maybe our success isn't just about shareholder returns, but also how we treat the environment, our workers, everyone.
Exactly.
But how does this translate to investing? Like, how do people actually use ESG to make investment decisions?
There are a few ways. Some investors, they specifically look for companies with good ESG scores because they believe those companies are better long-term bets. Others, they use ESG to screen out companies they don't like, you know, maybe fossil fuel companies or ones with bad human rights records. It's about aligning your investments with your values.
So it's like putting your money where your mouth is, supporting the companies you believe in. But at the end of the day, investing is about making money, right? Do these ESG investments actually perform as well as the traditional ones?
That's the big question. And honestly, there's no easy answer. Some studies show that ESG investments do just as well, maybe even better than the regular ones, while others show it's kind of mixed.
So is ESG just a feel-good thing, or is there real financial muscle behind it?
It's not that simple. There's more and more evidence suggesting that companies with good ESG scores, they tend to be better managed, less risky, and more resilient when things get tough.
Hmm. So good. ESG. It's not just about being good. It could actually be a sign of a strong, sustainable business. Makes you wonder why everyone isn't all over it then. Are there, like, downsides or criticisms of ESG?
Oh, for sure. ESG is not perfect, it's still developing, and there are some valid concerns. A big one is that ESG ratings, they can be super subjective, like there's no universal standard. Different agencies might give the same company totally different scores.
So it's like comparing apples and oranges. Yeah, that sounds confusing and maybe even open to manipulation.
Right. And that lack of standardization, it leads to accusations of greenwashing. That's when companies try to make themselves look way more eco-friendly or responsible than they actually are.
So it's all just for show, not the real deal.
Yeah, it's a problem. That's why we need more transparency, more accountability in how companies report their ESG stuff.
Okay, transparency, that's key. What are some of the other criticisms of ESG?
Well, some folks argue that focusing on ESG actually hurts financial returns. They say that by caring about all these other things, you're basically sacrificing profits, and that could hurt the economy overall.
So it's the age-old dilemma, right? Doing good versus making money. But couldn't you argue that in the long run, companies with strong ESG, they're going to be more adaptable, more resilient, which could actually lead to better financial outcomes?
That's what a lot of ESG supporters say, yeah. They think these companies are better prepared for the future.
It's a fascinating debate, for sure. And it'll probably keep going as ESG evolves. But I think we've covered a lot of ground here. We've got a good understanding of what ESG is, how it connects to that court case, and some of the pros and cons. What do you say we dig into those criticisms a bit more in the next part of our deep dive?
Sounds good to me. We can look at those arguments against ESG, explore the potential risks, and then maybe think about how to address those challenges but still promote responsible business practices.
All right, so we've covered a lot of ground with ESG, what it is, how it all started with that court case. But we've got to be honest, there are people who aren't so happy about ESG, right? And some of their points, they're pretty valid.
Oh, definitely. ESG is like, it's still a work in progress. There are going to be bumps along the way. Some of the criticisms are about how it's put into practice, and some are like questioning the whole idea itself.
Let's start with the practical stuff. You mentioned before that ESG ratings, they can be all over the place. Makes it tough to compare companies like apples to oranges, you said. What can we do about that?
Well, I think the biggest thing is transparency. Companies need to be more open about their data, and we need like standardized reporting. Everyone's got to be on the same page.
Makes sense.
That way, investors can actually compare companies fairly, and those rating agencies, their scores will be more reliable.
So we need a universal language for ESG.
Exactly. Then there's the argument that, ESG investing actually hurts your returns. What do you think about that?
That's a big one.
It's true. Sometimes doing the right thing, the socially responsible thing, it can cost more in the short term. But people who are really into ESG, they argue those costs. They're balanced out by the long-term benefits.
So it's about playing the long game.
Exactly. Like switching to renewable energy, that might be pricey up front, but in the long run, your energy costs are lower and there's less risk you're not tied to fossil fuels anymore.
Right.
And there's more and more proof that companies with strong ESG, they're just better run overall. They manage risk better, and that makes them more attractive to investors.
They're ahead of the curve, huh?
Exactly. Like climate change, social inequality, these are things that can really hurt a business down the line.
Right.
But companies with good ESG, they're already on top of it.
So it's not just about being good, it's about being smart too.
Right. But I'm sure some people would say this is all just woke capitalism, companies pretending to care so they can make more money.
Yeah, I've heard that.
It's important to be able to tell the difference, right? Between companies that really believe in ESG and those that are just jumping on the bandwagon for good PR.
Greenwashing, yeah, we talked about that.
True ESG, it's about creating value for everyone involved. Employees, customers, the community, and the shareholders. It's not just checking boxes.
So you're not sacrificing profits. You're realizing that your success depends on all these other things too. But doesn't this focus on stakeholders, on everyone? I mean, couldn't that give too much power to investors? Like these big asset managers, they're not elected officials, right?
That's a valid point. It raises questions about who gets to decide what's best for society as a whole.
Yeah, that's a big one.
There's definitely a risk that ESG could be used to push certain agendas that, maybe not everyone agrees with, instead of focusing on what's actually important for a company's success.
Like a backdoor way of making social policy.
Yeah, something like that. And that's why it's important to keep ESG grounded, focused on things that are directly linked to a company's value, not just pet projects. And we need more transparency so investors can see exactly what companies are doing.
Keep it real, in other words.
Exactly. But even if we solve those problems, there's still the issue of, you know, some industries might get left behind. Like, what about people whose jobs depend on fossil fuels?
Yeah, that's a tough one.
The move towards a sustainable economy, it's going to create winners and losers. We've got to think about those who might get hurt and find ways to help them.
It's complex, that's for sure.
Totally. It's like we're navigating without a map.
It feels like it. But hey, at least we're having the conversation, right?
Exactly. ESG is complicated, it's always changing, and we don't have all the answers yet. But we need to keep talking, keep debating, and try to find solutions that work for everyone.
Couldn't said it better myself. And for our listeners who are hooked on this topic, I highly recommend reading the full A.P. Smith v. Barlow decision. It's a court case, yeah, but it's surprisingly readable, and it gives you a lot to think about in terms of like the big picture of business and society.
It reminds us that these debates have been going on for a while. A.P. Smith v. Barlow, it's a landmark case, and its legacy, it still shapes how we see corporate responsibility today.
So whether you're a lawyer, an investor, or just someone who cares about the impact of business, this case, the whole ESG movement, it's definitely worth exploring. And that, my friends, is what the deep dive is all about. Thanks for joining us on this journey, and we'll see you next time for another deep dive into something interesting and complex.